Everyone, welcome back to the Peace and Liberty Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Clyde. If you didn't notice, I took a much-needed break last week, not because I'm tired, but because I'm working on a side project, which will begin June 18th. Remember that date, June 18th. I won't say anything else other than it'll be a second podcast that'll run once a week, and me and the people involved expect it to really take off. As far as this show, I do plan on remaining on my Monday through Friday schedule, but what I'll be doing is saving up a bunch of episodes that are pre-recorded, and from there, you'll get all the content all the time. So please, 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 if you can, support me on Patreon. It's patreon.com/thepeaceandlibertypodcast. $5 a month for me will make such a huge difference. And if you support real libertarianism, you know that voluntary donations are market signals that you're doing something that others want to be involved in. And I know for a fact this show is making a difference because there are some days I get 10 different messages from people and I can't respond to them all, so I know you all are out there listening. But today, we're going to be discussing the last chapter of Discrimination and Disparities by Thomas Sowell. And if you've been following the last four parts of the series, you're infinitely more enlightened than your Facebook friends. The last chapter is titled Social Visions and Human Consequences, so here we go. The real per capita income that Britain reached in 1880 was not reached by Spain until 1960, and in Portugal until 1970. At these latter dates, the real per capita income in both Spain and Portugal was not quite half in contemporary Britain. Homicide rates in Eastern Europe have for centuries been multiples of homicide rates in Western Europe. But the point of these statistics is that Britain didn't have power to suppress the economic developments in Spain or Portugal. They just did it. So just because disparities exist, that doesn't mean they're a result of discrimination or type 2 discrimination like we spoke of in the past. Even the weather is unequal. Thunderstorms are 20 times as frequent in southern Florida as in coastal California. More than half the geysers in the entire world are in Yellowstone. Asia has more than 70 mountain peaks higher than 20,000 feet, and Africa has none. Age disparities. There are more than 20 nations with median ages in their 40s, and more than 20 other nations with median ages under 20. Now, I just turned 26, but do any of you all remember how dumb you were at age 20? Aside from having common sense or not, you had no life experience. But now imagine you live in a country where the median age is less than 20. How advanced could your country be? This is totally unfair, right? I mean, but it's not discrimination. We're just talking about median ages in certain countries. Sowell points out that a majority of the people in America, or excuse me, in American prisons, were raised either with one parent or no parent at all. Think about why that is, and also keep in mind with regards to the most recent school shootings that out of the last 27 of these school shootings, 26 of these school shooters grew up without a father. And you may ask, why is growing up specifically without a father a problem? Well, think about what you learned from a father, how to tough things out, how to defend yourself, how to deal with complicated situations, how to respect other people. These are things that children growing up under single mothers often go without. It's very problematic. In the mid-1840s and 50s, there, of course, was the Irish potato famine. It claimed a million lives in a country of only 8.5 million people. So that was over 11% of the population. Nearly 2 million people fled. That's another 23% of the population. The reason the famine happened was because there was a fertilizer being used that contained a fungus. And this fungus flourished in the mild and moist climate of Ireland. And of course, Idaho is known for their potatoes today. They produce a lot more than Washington State, and they outproduce most of the other states combined. The point is that that same strand of potato grew perfectly fine in Idaho, but affected millions of lives in Ireland. Just that one factor. Low-income and minority schools are harmed by government, and the more you study history, the more you realize that, the more you understand why it is that cities are the way they are nowadays. It's no accident. Sowell mentions No Child Left Behind, which is a policy of George W. Bush, and how it ignored the painful possibility that there wasn't this universal desire for education, and some kids are just uninterested in learning. I can speak from experience here. I was in public school through most of my K-12 schooling, and absolutely, there were kids that were perpetually disrupting the entire class for the whole semester. The schools are full of these kids, and the thing is, public schools don't have the resources to attend to all these bad kids. And where do they send the kids if they don't have the room for them in the office or the principal's office or wherever? They just send them back to class. Substitute teachers have it the worst. I remember one clear case. I was in seventh grade English, and our teacher right near the beginning of the class had to take leave because she was having a baby. And the substitute teacher we had was just tormented. I don't remember learning a single thing in those few months, but I'll never forget the inability of not only one, but two teachers who cannot maintain the class under any circumstances. I guess I should have also mentioned that she had an assistant the whole rest of the school year. My God, I remember at one point, someone set off a stink bomb right in the middle of class. Look, the point is, and this is Sol's point, this one factor, namely these rowdy kids, have a huge effect on everyone. On everyone. Marxism, it's a doctrine that has failed over and over and at a great cost, mostly in lost lives. But take, for example, the idea that wealth comes from the exploitation of the workers. Now, if this were true, as Sol points out, then quote, we might expect to find that where there are larger concentrations of rich capitalists, we would find correspondingly larger concentrations of poverty. But the hard facts point in the opposite direction. The United States has more than five times as many billionaires as Africa and the Middle East put together. Yet most Americans, including those living below the official poverty line, have a far higher standard of living than that of the populations of Africa and the Middle East. And his next point is kind of rhetorical. It would be difficult to find even a single country ruled by Marxists where the standard of working class people has been as high as that of working class people in a number of capitalist countries. I mean, duh, there isn't any, right? The best they could do is attempt to point to Nordic countries, which, by the way, gain their wealth through the means of the free market. So when you hear people say that, oh, just look at the Nordic countries and their socialism, they don't know what they're talking about. They do not know what they're talking about. Sweden's a very interesting example. From 1870 to 1970, they saw spectacular growth during a free and deregulated period. Fast forward to today, though, they're still enjoying the remnants of these past polities, but the welfare states slowed them down quite drastically. And this is related to most of the surrounding countries. So I'm going to link to an article that gives you a ton of history about Sweden, but you know, maybe actually go research this stuff. You'll find that people who claim these things, they usually don't know what they're talking about. Now, the next part makes me laugh because it's so obvious if you think about it. When treating imprisoned murderers in England, Theodore Dalrymple found them, quote, using the same passive voice sentence constructions found among the intelligentsia when discussing social pathologies. So essentially, murderers use the same pathological lies and ways of structuring their lies as do politicians and intellectual elitists. How about that? Kind of obvious, all right? John Kenneth Galbraith, who, by the way, Rothbard hated Galbraith and was always trashing him. I have to suggest one article. Go read The Fallacy of the Public Sector by Rothbard and look at what he says about Galbraith. That's Murray at his absolute best. But continuing on, Galbraith was in London in May 1945 for a celebration of the end of the war. He noted there were 200,000 to 300,000 people there, and he wrote to his wife, like all British crowds, it was most orderly. Even in 1953, at the end of soccer matches, members of the losing team were known to stand up and applaud. By the mid-1960s, this sportsmanship was gone and vulgar insults were now common among British players and also among those in Australia and New Zealand. London had a total of 12 armed robberies in 1954. This rose to 1,400 in 1981 and 1,600 in 1991, despite increasing restrictions on firearms. The culture changed. It was so bad that brawls between what's known as firms became common still today. If you've ever seen the movie Green Street Hooligans, it has the actor Elijah Wood. That's what it's about. Elijah Wood is he's this kid that gets expelled from Harvard and he goes to live with his sister in England. And he ends up becoming part of this firm that essentially is a gang that goes and fights other gangs around the country or, you know, just after soccer matches or whatever. This stuff does exist. But back to what Sol's saying, he notes that, quote, insults and abuse of medical personnel became sufficiently widespread, or so widespread, that the National Health Service posted signs in its facilities warning that abusive and a threatening behavior toward the staff would be prosecuted. So imagine, you just got beaten up in a brawl, you're lying there, your skull's cracked, and they come in and bring you in and treat you, and you just treat the nurse like you would your enemy. You know, totally insane, but that was happening. He gives some startling statistics about blacks, but one important fact to think about first is that the black poverty rate declined from 87% in 1940 to 47% in 1960 before the welfare state. Before the welfare state began in the mid-60s. Keep that in mind when you think about these next facts. As of 1960, two-thirds of all black American children were living with both parents. That declined over the years until only one-third were living with both parents in 1995. 52% were living with their mother, 4% with their father, and 11% with neither. Among Black families in poverty, 85% of the children had no father present. Now, this didn't affect whites as much, but it still did. By 2008, nearly 30% of white children were born to unwed mothers. This is multiples based on what it was in the past. In England and Wales, 44% of children were born to unwed mothers in 2007. Other countries where more than 40% of children were born to unwed mothers include France, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Iceland. Funny enough, many of are the favorite Nordic countries, right? Family structure matters. The second to last section he discusses here discusses solutions, meaning what do we do about all this? Through all the five episodes I've presented now, think about quite literally the extent to which discrimination and disparities do exist. Once you're cognizant of that, you realize the main point is that you can't undo any of this. In most situations, things are completely out of our control. We can't choose to be born as the firstborn child. We can't choose where we're born. We can't choose what parents we have. We can't choose how our childhoods would turn out. That's in our parents' control. We can't choose what culture we grow up in. So there is nothing equal about life. It's specifically unequal. Everything about it. 43% of American prison inmates grew up with a single parent. How do you change that? I mean, for any of you who grew up with single parents, was it really as simple as saying, mommy, daddy, can you just go find another partner? Most kids have disdain for their non-biological figures in their life, at least at first. In Britain, it's similar. 27% of prison inmates had been placed in child protective custody at some point growing up. There's no easy answer to any of this. Individually, just look at language. Western Europe developed written versions of the language centuries earlier than the languages of Eastern Europe. Thus, a Czech child in Habsburg Empire during the early 19th century would be taught in his own native language only in elementary school. It wasn't until 1848 till high schools were teaching in the Czech language. Now, these are based on inherent restraints at the time, but really think about what he's saying there. A Japanese-owned multinational company has decreed English as the only sole language of the enterprise where the branches are located around the world. In other words, they recognize that English is the lingua franca of international commerce, as it is the language of international airline pilot communications with airports around the world. In Singapore, they're required to learn English. The decision to do this in these countries is based on practicality. And Seoul notes that human beings do not exist to preserve cultures or to preserve a socially isolated constituency for the benefit of leaders. Related to government solutions, I find Seoul will give the government more credit than it deserves sometimes, but still, he notes that quote, government decisions, however, tend to not be categorical. Things are either legal or illegal, and people are either eligible or ineligible for benefits provided by the government. Billionaires are legally eligible for government subsidies in agriculture, even if there is not enough money to provide adequate medical care in the government hospitals for military veterans. Government employees are eligible for pensions that pay far more generously than comparable workers and maintain the safety of crumbling infrastructure. So lots of people get special benefits at the cost of others. That's how government works. How about housing solutions? In 2017, families of four people with a family income of $100,000 a year were classified as low income in San Francisco. So in essence, the government always has tried to create housing programs to house those who otherwise couldn't afford to be housed. But why is a family earning $100,000 a year being subsidized because of their decision to live in San Francisco, which, by the way, is an expensive city? People sort themselves out in many different ways. I mean, blacks were 99% of the population in the innermost circle in 1930 and 88% of the population in the next circle, but only 6% in the outermost fifth circle. The proportion of families on welfare in the innermost zone was 2.5 times the proportion in the outermost zone. And all he's saying is, when he's talking about how people sort themselves out, you know, they don't do it based on where the government tells them to go. They do it based on what they want to do. It's like an overly simple point, but you know, don't miss that. The last little section of the book is titled The Past and the Future. And basically all he's saying is that discrimination disparities are not new aspects that are brought about through the 21st century. They've existed throughout the entirety of human history. He notes that at various times and places, China and the Islamic world were more advanced than Europe, but later fell behind. While Japan, they rose from poverty and backwardsness in the middle of the 19th century. Jews, who had played little or no role in the revolutionary emergence of science and technology, in the early modern era produced a wholly disproportionate share of the scientists who won Nobel Prizes in the 20th century. even slavery. It's existed throughout all of history. Europeans enslaved other Europeans for centuries before Europeans brought the first African slaves purchased from other Africans who had enslaved them to the Western Hemisphere. In North Africa, there were Europeans that were enslaved in greater numbers than blacks were in the colonies. It was called the Barbary slave trade. Research that. Well, it was certainly a ton of fun covering this book. Again, you should go and buy it on Amazon. I covered a lot of facts, but there's plenty I left out that you can discover for yourself. Moving forward, like I said, June 18th will be the start of something beautiful. So be on the lookout. Donate to Patreon if you can. As always, for peace and liberty.